Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
The Federal Aviation Administration began conducting research in the 1990s to determine how to ensure maximum safety at airports where the full runway safety or overrun area cannot be obtained. Working in concert with the University of Dayton, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and the Engineered Arresting Systems Corporation of Logan Township, New Jersey, a new technology emerged to safely arrest overrunning aircraft.
The Engineered Material Arresting System, or EMAS, uses crushable concrete placed at the end of a runway to stop an aircraft that overruns that runway. The tires of the aircraft sink into the lightweight concrete. The aircraft is decelerated as it rolls through the material. Currently, EMAS is installed at 42 U.S. airports. Here today to talk to us about this EMAS technology is James White, who's Deputy Director, Airport Safety and Standards at the FAA. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So let's just start out, but can you give us a sense of what factors cause an aircraft to overshoot a runway on landing, and how often does this happen?
There are a lot of factors that can cause an aircraft to overrun a runway. Some of them are pilot landing long down the runway, landing with too much speed. Then there are mechanical issues. You have aircraft that braking systems may fail or thrust reversers may fail. You put that in with the contaminated runways. If they are wet or if they have snow or if they have ice, that can contribute to it. So there are a variety of reasons that can cause an overrun. Now, they don't happen an awful lot, but they do happen a few dozen times a year in the U.S. Most of those are not serious. They are ones where an aircraft just slightly overran the runway and maybe got a tire stuck in the mud, or they missed an exit on a wet runway or snow-covered runway and they put a tire in the mud or something like that. So serious ones are infrequent, but they do occur. And I think the best data on that would be with those 58 systems that are installed at runway ends in the U.S. We have already stopped 7 overrunning aircraft with very little damage to the aircraft and no significant injuries to passengers or crew. So it's not an infrequent occurrence, but it certainly is not every day.
So when I just want to pick up on that number that there were 7 events that were, I'm going to call them saves.
Yes.
Over what period of time? How many years?
Well, that's since the first installation. And the first installation was at JFK in 1996. So there's been, we've steadily increased that number since then, doing about 4 or 5 installations a year. But when you look at the total installation, to still have 7 successful saves is an indication that it's, you know, it's not a really rare event. They do happen.
And I want to ask you about the EMAS system in a moment, what it's made of and how it works. But first,
right.
I want to ask, what are the dimensions of the runway safety area? What does the FAA recommend for the length and width of runway safety areas? And how come some airports aren't able to meet these recommendations?
Well, the main reason that they don't meet the recommendations is that many, many of our airports were donated back to civilian aviation after World War II. And so there were no modern-day design standards at that time, particularly there weren't any runway safety standards. And gradually, communities and cities built up around these airports and constrained them so that when we did introduce runway safety standards, there were many airports where it was not practicable for them to meet the standard. The communities had just grown up around them. Now there were highways that it was literally impossible to move. There were trains. There were waterways, rivers, bays, particularly for a lot of the coastal airports. And so it was not a surprise to us when we introduced the standard that many airports could not meet that. And so we have not said that an airport is unsafe if it can operate without an RSA. We call the RSA an enhancement to safety. But we do recognize that it's an important enhancement to safety, and that's why we initiated this very high priority program and a very expensive program to upgrade all the runway safety areas at our 560 or so certificated commercial service airports to meet design standards for RSAs, and the keywords are to the extent practicable, because we understand that there's a certain set of them that due to the geography, it's just not going to be possible or practicable to fully meet the standard. In those cases, we have tasked our regional people to work with the airport and improve the runway safety area to the extent practicable. And we require them to consider EMAS when they're making that practicability determination. In other words, if it's just not practicable to get 1,000 feet beyond the runway because you have a harbor there that you can't fill in for environmental reasons, then they should certainly consider an EMAS installation.
Excellent.
Some areas, they just even won't have enough land to do that. And that may be the best they can do is almost nothing. But in most cases, they will be able to take action to improve the RSA, but possibly not improve it to the full standard.
Well, excellent. Well, that brings us right to EMAS then. What's it made of and how does it work?
Well, as you mentioned in your introductory, it's a high air content concrete. So many people call it a crushable concrete. It's prefabricated at the manufacturer's facility in blocks. And each installation must be specifically designed for that particular airport. So the manufacturer looks at what they call the critical airport, a critical aircraft. That's the aircraft that most uses the runway, and they get the weight of that aircraft, and then they have a software program that'll allow them to design the EMAS so that it will stop that critical aircraft, assuming it enters the EMAS bed at 70 knots.
So you earlier, you quoted a figure, you said 1,000 feet. If we had all the land in the world, is 1,000 feet what you're looking for in terms of an overrun area, a safety area?
Well, that's what we have issued as our standard. And we base that upon our analysis of all the incident data about aircraft that overran runways. And I believe, and don't quote me on the number, but it was over 90% of those incidents, the aircraft stopped within 1,000 feet of the runway.
Okay. So does the EMAS installation vary in length as a function of the what space you have and the, what the critical aircraft is?
It varies in length based upon the analysis of the critical aircraft for that particular airport. Now, what our analysis has shown is that a 600-foot EMAS bed, which we call a standard bed, would have the equivalent stopping power of a 1,000-foot runway safety area. So, in other words, we would say the airport would get the same protection from a 600-foot EMAS installation as it would from a 1,000-foot runway safety area. Now, in some cases, we don't even have enough land for a standard EMAS, and that we will allow a non-standard EMAS, which will not stop an aircraft at 70 knots. It may only be able to stop one at 40 knots, but that goes along with our intent to improve the RSA to the extent practicable, in that saying even a 40-knot EMAS system would be better than nothing.
How fast is 70 knots in miles per hour?
Well, you'll have to use your calculator. I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay, yeah, I have no idea if my, I don't know if my calculator has a knots function on it. So if, so with EMAS, if let's say a plane overruns and rolls onto it and is stopped.
Right.
Is the EMAS system destroyed by that event? Does it then need to be rebuilt, or what's the status of it afterwards?
Well, that's one of the advantage of it being installed in modular blocks. So when you have an incident and you have to repair the EMAS, the contractor only has to come out and replace the damaged blocks, and he does not have to replace the entire bed.
So are those blocks fixed in place, or are they just held in place by their own weight?
They're primarily held in place by their own weight. I don't know the exact details of the construction, whether they are pinned to the ground or not. I don't have the answer to that.
Okay. So how rapid is the deceleration of that aircraft? Presumably it hits the EMAS at 70 knots.
I don't have the number in G's for you, but the design is to minimize the damage to the aircraft and to not cause any significant injuries to the passengers. So there is a design deceleration rate, and it's a slow enough deceleration rate so that our experience has shown us in these seven saves that there's very little damage to the aircraft and almost no serious injuries. So it's not a real sudden deceleration.
So that was going to be my next question: what does the owner of the aircraft have to do to get that aircraft back into operation?
Well, that depends on the particular damage. As I said, some of them have very little damage, not even having to replace landing gear. So there is minimal damage to the aircraft. I'm sure they are checked out, and particularly the landing gear, to make sure that they are still able to operate appropriately.
So when this, after an event happens,
right?
Presumably, I would assume the aircraft gets towed out of that EMAS.
That's correct.
And in the process, does it create more damage in the EMAS? That is, does it leave tracks where it's pulled out?
It would be possible. I'm sure that usually they would attempt to pull it out either in the same path, if possible, so that they wouldn't do that.
And when I first was reading about this and getting ready to talk about it, my first image, which I now believe is incorrect, was of something like quicksand. And I thought that's brilliant. It rolls into some soft, wet concrete. But I guess that's not right. It's rolling onto some concrete that, what do we picture, that starts to crumble a little bit under the wheels? Or
crushes. That's correct. If you look on the website for the manufacturer, he has photos of incidents where the aircraft have run into an EMAS bed. And you can see right behind it, it leaves a trail where the soft concrete is just crushed along the treads left by the landing gear and the tires.
And that must all be calculated for the right rate of deceleration, because my thought as we were talking was, well, why not just put a sand pit? But I guess sand, the plane would stop too fast and it would hurt people.
It's possible. That's correct. This came out of our research program, and that's they did a lot of computer analysis and laboratory analysis of this. We actually had an aircraft that we owned at the FAA Technical Center that did high-speed taxis into an actual prototype EMAS bed. So these things were all looked at extensively before we proceeded.
What does it cost to install EMAS on a runway?
It's very specific to the installation. If there is 600 feet of relatively level ground at the end of the runway, that's a very straightforward installation, and it could be anywhere $2 to $4 million. Now, that increases significantly depending upon how much land is available and what the condition is. So if they have a drop-off and they have to do a lot of fill work, that's going to increase the cost. If they have some cases, they have water, maybe in a harbor or something. They have actually talked about putting pilings in with a deck and then putting the EMAS on top of that pilings in the deck over the water. And so that would significantly increase the cost of the EMAS. And we look at those costs in each case because not all airports are equal. If you have a smaller airport with less commercial traffic and less numbers of passengers that go through there, you're probably not going to spend as much money on an EMAS system. Where you get airports like JFK, Boston, LaGuardia, San Francisco, Los Angeles, those airports are just major airports with millions of passengers going through them, you'd be willing to spend considerably more for an EMAS.
I presume that when a decision is made to invest in an EMAS, that there's some federal grant money that goes in and matches local money to do this?
There is. It is a safety capital program that is eligible for grant assistance from the FAA. And so that goes under our normal matching formula, and that's handled by our grant people. So I don't want to give you the exact numbers. It's around 90% federal share for larger airports, for smaller airports who don't have the financial resources, and then it's a smaller federal share for large airports.
So it sounds like it's based a little bit on ability to pay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we were curious about the actual performance experience.
Oh, and let me just say, yes. that federal matching share, that's not something that is determined by FAA. That's in the congressional statutes that tells us what federal matching shares are for,
sure.
for grants.
Yeah, of course. It's in the authorization.
And
we understand that. So you said there's been 7 incidents, and can you share any more detail on what that performance has been? I mean, apparently you've been quite satisfied with it because you're expanding the program.
Oh, yeah. I would say it's been one of the great success stories for improving runway safety. Each one of them was stopped, as I said, with very little damage to the aircraft and no significant injuries to passengers. And that was been a very wide range of aircraft types. It was a 747 cargo plane at JFK. It was a couple of smaller jets and various sized aircraft.
Are there any drawbacks to EMAS?
The only drawbacks to it are the cost that, as I said, for some very difficult installations, it can be a significant cost.
And compared in a situation where there was sufficient room to build a conventional overrun runway, would EMAS ever be considered, or is the cost of a conventional extra space so much less that if an airport has room, they're just going to build a longer runway?
You would have to look at each one individually because depending on the situation, it may be very inexpensive for the airport to buy the additional land to get a standard 1,000-foot runway safety area. On the other hand, the land may be available, but it may be very expensive, and it might actually be cheaper to install a standard EMAS. So you would look at the economics of each particular airport.
And is this strictly a United States phenomenon so far, or are foreign airports installing it as well?
It is a bit, the manufacturer has installed them, and I believe at 5 international airports, a few in China, I think a few in Taiwan. But it's been slow to catch on overseas, not because people are not interested and think it works. It's just that the U.S. airports are very fortunate that our Congress has set up a grant program so that we provide financial assistance. None of these foreign countries do that. And so the airport has to absorb that cost itself, and that's often difficult. So the last data I have is that there have been 5 international installations in Madrid, China, and Taipei.
Hmm. So I presume I understand the technology, that it's not going to give us a positive result if an aircraft lands short of a runway. But what about side excursions? Are there any installations where you're using it to protect against exit from the side?
No. Don't forget, you know, the runway may be 10,000 feet long. And so if you have a veer off to the side, you don't have a really good idea exactly where that's going to occur. So you wouldn't be able to design one of these systems. And if you try to do it for a very long length, it becomes just not practical economically. So we rely upon just having a runway safety area that is along the sides of the runway, and the airports try to do that, but they can't always do it.
So that's a zone that's free and clear so that if aircraft ran into it, wouldn't hit anything significant.
Right. And I believe that extends like 500 feet on either side of the center line of the runway.
Does a pilot approaching a runway that's got EMAS at the end, does she or he know about that? Is that in the charts?
Yes, it should be in the navigation information that's available for that airport.
And do you think there's any of them that are like, you know what, I think I could be interesting to roll out onto that and see what it's like?
No.
It's probably an employment risk if someone does.
They would not do that intentionally.
Of course not.
So looking ahead, is this the ultimate technology? I mean, I'm aware that
no, it's not the ultimate technology. We have been doing research to try and find alternative materials because we are looking to find less expensive ways that are just as effective.
Interesting.
But that's still being looked at.
And you're seeing more installations. That is, we're not done with these installations, from what I understand.
No, we are still in the midst of our program to improve our runway safety areas to the extent practicable. And our goal is to complete all those at the commercial service airports by the end of 2015. And several of those will use EMAS installations to improve the RSA.
Interesting. Well, that's not very far away. It's an ambitious goal.
Well, we've been working on it since 2000.
Well, still in all, it's a lot of change. And
that's correct. And a lot, of course, of the most difficult ones are going to be at the end.
Yeah. And as an engineer, I would observe that, in not to diminish the value of the technology, but it seems like a really elegant, simple solution to a complicated problem.
Yes.
So, Jim, we thank you very much for explaining this to us. It's been very helpful. It's a very positive and optimistic program, really, to make use of, if you will, simple, not necessarily cheap resources to solve a difficult and challenging problem. So thanks so much for discussing this with us today.
No, it's my pleasure. It's not often we get to really talk about a successful project that has come out of our research activities, and this is really one that has proven successful and has definitely saved lives.
Well, it certainly has, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk with you today. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye.